and welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple. And this week feels kind of like old home week in that our guest today is currently living in my old neck of the woods. Now, she's an Illinois native, but she is now living in North Carolina. Who am I talking about? Tracy Devlin. Her book is Flashpoint, and it is a barn burner. Well, it's hot in many ways, which we're going to find a, which we're going to find out about very shortly. So, you know what? Heck, let's get right on to it. Happy Monday. Here's Tracy Devlin, our latest thriller writer on The Thriller Zone.
Hey, David.
How are you, Tracy?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Superb. Is that a real, actual background or is that a Zoom background?
Oh, yeah. No, that's my office.
That's sweet.
Thank you.
That is super sweet. Let's see. That's pine on the top and that looks like oak on the floor.
Wow. You got a good eye.
I'll tell you, this boy's from North Carolina. I know my wood.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to talk about that in a very short bit. I'm very excited to have you here. I had no idea. All right, this is going to sound really kind of dumb, but you know me. I'm just kind of shoot from the hip. You're really a big deal. Yeah. No, let me tell you something. We're going to get to Flashpoint, by the way, which is part of the Blackwell's novel series. But no. You're a USA Today bestseller, and that doesn't come easily. And just wait till everybody finds out what I have learned in the last few days. About you.
Researching. Young. So you make my hands break out in sweat just talking about stuff like that.
See, girl, I'm gonna sport my North Carolina accent. I'm a little bit of a private investigator by nature.
Yeah. I knew that about you coming into this. I knew you would dig. So it'll be fun.
There's a few things I'm holding off onto the side, but I may bring them out if I want to.
Be gentle.
Please. I will. All right. Like I said, Flashpoint is coming. Great. I can tell you, I knew exactly who this was. The cover designer was Stuart Bosch, I want to say.
Very good.
I know Stuart Bosch's style.
Very well done. Amazing work.
Just so good. But I want to start off with, as I get to know you, Tracy, and I feel like I already know you because we've spent so much time following each other on social media and you interact so graciously. What's that?
Me harassing you. You take harassment so well. I appreciate that.
Nah, it's all part of the deal. I like it. But I do want to get to know you, and I see that we have something mutual besides our love of wooden interiors. Mm. All right, you're an Illinois native. And I once had several radio shows in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in North Carolina, and now you call it home.
Isn't that quite crazy? Yeah.
So I'm going to guess Asheville.
I'm about an hour from Asheville.
In which direction? Don't tell me the town.
East, kind of southeast. I'm in if you know where Marion is located, I'm south of Marion.
Okay, watch this.
I'm in the foothills of the Blue Ridge is how they put it.
So. Watch this. You saw Tammy took a fall. My wife, yeah. Tammy, took a fall, broke her kneecap.
Oh, she broke it? Oh,
broke my it. Gosh. Lateral break right across the kneecap. She was running, didn't see a buckle in the sidewalk. If that hadn't happened, I would be sitting in Marion right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Because my sister and her partner are building a home in Marion, and we were going to celebrate her birthday in Asheville.
Oh, how cool. Oh, my gosh. That's great. Small world, as they say.
Small world, indeed. My sister loves Marion. Now, we lived in Charlotte, forever. She was there like 30 years, 33 years. I was there 20. So, yeah.
Nowhere else can you get a Bigfoot festival. Nowhere else.
Baby, you got that right. Marion. Oh my God. Wait till I tell her. She loves your style of books, which we're going to get to. Oh, I mean, yeah, thrillers, but there's a lot of other things I found out a little about Miss Devlin that I did not know about. All right. Now, next, also, you are the first thriller writer, first author on the show that is both crafting thrillers. I love this. And writing both contemporary and historical suspense, and with elements of mystery and romance and environmental crime. I mean, this is what I meant at the top when I said you're some kind of big deal. I mean, who writes that broad of a spectrum and still keeps it all, you know, in that thriller-ish world?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. Whenever I first started out, I guess, oh gosh, it's been a couple of decades ago now, just reading, I read a lot of historical romance. And because that's primarily what I read, whenever I decided, oh, I'd like to try and do this, naturally, I went to writing historical romance and I really enjoyed it. I think I had a good voice for it and that sort of thing. But my editor at the time, my trilogy was published through Sourcebooks. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them or not, but mm-hmm. my editor at the time absolutely refused to let me call it a historical romantic thriller. She didn't want thriller in there at all. And so I got to think, well, maybe it's not a thriller. Maybe I just, I mean, my opening scene in my debut novel is the heroine in a torture chamber, in a French torture chamber. So I don't know what's wrong with me. But anyway, so I started out that way. And then as genres can do, historical romance kind of took a nosedive. It went through one of its little deaths. And so I had a couple of really good author friends that we started talking about it. And we're like, well, hey, why don't we try and create this contemporary world? And I'm like, I'm game. What am I going to do at this point? I can't sell historical romance right now. So we all started writing in this world. And that's when I started writing the contemporary romantic suspense, which I think really veers more into romantic thrillers at this point.
Yeah. Well, as a way to ease myself into the world of Devlin, as I would, or should I say Steel Ridge?
Yes, Steel
Ridge. I see that not only is your book published by Steel Ridge Publishing, but you have an entire Steel Ridge universe, which is made up of you and your partners. Let's see, Kelsey Browning and Adrian Giordano, right?
Yes.
And tell me more about that, because here's what I love. You pick this up and you're like, oh, okay, it's a woman in trouble and fire. It's a thriller. And then you look inside here for those with video and you go, okay, well, we got Steel Ridge, the Blackwells, 2 books, Steel Ridge, the Steels, 8 books, Steel Ridge, the Kingstons, 5 books, Steel Ridge, Christmas Capers, 12 books. And that's not even counting your Nexus Spymaster series and your Bones and Gemstones series. I mean, 35-ish, 34, 33, 35-ish books, right?
Yeah, that we all wrote. Obviously, yeah. I had help there. But no, we did it. Like I said, we did it to try and find a way for all of us to work together. And it was a little strategic, too, because rather than I'm a slow writer. So 1 book a year, 1.5 books a year, maybe. So with the three of us writing in the same world, we could publish 3 books a year, right? So that strategically, that's a much better business decision for us. And, but it was a ton of fun. We actually, the first time we really started talking about it, we actually came and stayed in Asheville, and we did a writer's retreat in Asheville.
Great place to do it. Yeah.
It was wonderful. And so anyway, we basically came up with this concept of Steel Ridge, North Carolina. Even small towns have secrets, is our little byline. And Steel Ridge is you'll probably recognize these locations, but Steel Ridge geographically is located west of Asheville, where Waynesville is.
Okay, here's my connection to Waynesville. I shot a movie in Waynesville called Chasing Grace.
Yeah.
Which was based on my first book, Discovering Grace. But when I was growing up, my dad used to belong to the Methodist Conference. So we'd go up to Lake Junaluska, which is right there at Waynesville. And so it was time to shoot the movie. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go back to my roots. Not trying to steal your show here, though.
No, good.
And we shot it in Waynesville, one of the most charming, wonderful little towns in all of North Carolina.
It is. It's just, it's so, when you think about mountain town.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect image of mountain town. And so that's geographically where we set it. It's a little bit of a mishmash between Waynesville and Hendersonville as far as the way the town looks and operates and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to approach it more from a kind of the natural world. Adrienne, she's all about, she's like a crime fiction. She's a really good crime. She's about the police procedurals, FBI, CIA, those types of things. And then Kelsey was a very straight contemporary romance. So she's all about the people, the relationships with the different people. And she's always wanting to know what the motivations are and things like that. So when we would get together to plot out these books, we would bring all of these, I guess, strengths of art, you know, that we would bring to the process. And it made it a lot of fun. It's been a great ride.
I'm grinning like a kid at Christmas because the connections. And you mentioned Hendersonville. So my brother and his wife and three daughters live in Hendersonville. And so then Barb and Brenda live in Marion. My other sister lives in Charlotte, and I was born in Winston-Salem. So
okay, all right, yeah, I've been to Winston-Salem once.
Yeah,
that's all. I can't remember what the name of the little. It's like a. Oh shoot! I just lost the name. It's like a historic village that's there.
Salem.
Is that it's like a historic? Okay.
Salem Village.
There was an apothecary in there that I went and just talk their ear off. I'm very into that whole apothecary, herbal, medicinal type stuff. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Salem's where all my family's, my parents are buried. So yeah.
Okay.
A lot of connection to North Carolina. Yeah. Anyway. So here's what's so cool. You have all these different styles and I got to get to this because I'm sitting here. Here's one of the secrets about me. I don't tend to, I often will not read the blurb or, you know, the jacket. Sometimes I won't read blurbs at all. I reached out, we connected somehow over social media, of course, and so forth and so on. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I like the cover. There was something about it. Oh, it's FBI special. And then I stopped. I didn't go any further. And I didn't know about your romantic background. Where's my sexy music?
Yeah.
And then I do this feature called If This Scene Could Talk.
Yes.
Almost pulled out because I'm at chapter 43 at the time. And I'm like, and maybe it happened earlier, but 43 sticks out in my mind. I'm like, yeah. Oh, baby. Uh-huh.
Did you call Tammy into the room?
Tammy, you got a couple of minutes here? I need to compare some notes with you, darling.
Yeah, right.
Holy moly. Yeah, so this is the first thriller I've read where I'm like, I'm a little hot and bothered, baby. Let's compare notes. I mean.
And my writing is pretty tame compared to some romance authors. So, yeah.
Yeah,
it's about middle of the road.
It's no 50 Shades of Grey, but it did get my mind to wandering. It got my mind into wandering. All right, so this is what I'm digging into your website, and it looks like you and your partners there are doing it looks like it's your own publishing company. So my question is, would you call this traditional publishing, self-publishing, hybrid? What would you call it?
I call it self-publishing, independent publishing for sure. we created a publishing company so that we could share all of the expenses, publish it underneath, you know, one consistent, I publish it in one consistent way. Sure. And then that way, if something ever happened to the partnership, you know, it's kind of like, Andrews and Wilson, you know how they'll write a book and they it's basically co-authored.
Right.
Well, all of our books, as you showed with the cover, we write them individually. So they are standalone books. And if anything ever happened to the partnership, you know, we could get our rights back from Steel Ridge Publishing and we could, you know, just republish them ourselves if we wanted to. So it just made everything easier on the administrative side.
And I guess the bigger question is, and if it's digging a little bit too deep, just tell me to back off, but you retain all rights, you retain all control, you retain all income. So are you, and you're still selling via Amazon. So you're getting a split of Amazon, as we all know, somewhere between 30 and 70%. But you also are doing something that's really super sweet. And I wondered, like when I got into self-publishing about 2005, 6, 7, somewhere in there, I thought, why is there not a situation where you could come to my website, we'll call it davidtemple.com, and buy a book directly from me? Now, of course, I would have to have it on site and package it and ship it. So there's that cost. However, if I can get a bulk discount, and I realize I'm talking business here, but you're living a lot of the shop, so it's good for me to talk shop talk.
Yep.
So let's say, for instance, I can get the books in volume at a drastically reduced price and I get a discount on shipping. So now I have total control and I make a larger percentage. And that was with a company called PayHip. Mm-hmm. So that's now come out. So the advantage to PayHip is it this that you're at a secure pass through? In other words, it's kind of like Stripe or PayPal, although with PayHip you're still paying those fees. Does that make sense? And how does that work?
Yeah, no, PayHip works with BookFunnel. So PayHip is going to be primarily for ebooks, the sale of ebooks. And so it works with BookFunnel, and BookFunnel is the mechanism to distribute the book to the consumer or the reader, right?
Right.
There's also WooCommerce mm-hmm. that can work with your website and Shopify. And, you know, some of those, they might have connections with other companies where you could just distribute it. Even with like your print book, you could use those other companies to distribute your book. I chose PayHip, or we chose PayHip, just because if somebody does buy a print book from us, you know, we'd like to sign it and sign it to them and autograph it and that sort of thing. But if you don't care about that, you just want to, you know, send them the book, you can go that other route as well. But PayHip, yeah, you know, you're getting 95% of the profits and you get it immediately. You're not waiting 30, 60, 90 days for your money. They get it immediately, you know, it's just another way of getting your revenue of selling your book.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're published wide. So we're in Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Google, all of those places.
So you really do have the best of all worlds, minus perhaps the marketing machine of, say, a Simon & Schuster, first one that popped into my head. Right. So they have a volume of cash and resources that takes a Tracy book and shoves it out into the universe. So that's really one of the few differences, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's because I had the publisher, you know, with my first three books, and I really enjoyed, I loved working with a team. You know, you contact your publicist and you could ask for pretty much anything and they never told me no. You know what I mean? So it was nice that way because you're working with a team and you really wrote the book and then you got the galleys in and those types of things. They pretty much they pretty much guided the train, right? So they, right. they were the ones who were in control of it. And I had a smaller piece of it. Whenever you're self-publishing, the whole train is yours.
Yeah.
You're guiding it. You're on it. You're coming up from behind too. And it just, it can be a lot. It can be a lot. And if you're not disciplined, you know, it's going to be tough to be successful in it. So you have to really kind of think about those things whenever you're trying to decide what you want to do. There's some really neat things with self-publishing, like the cover. You know, I don't want to say total control because I'm not in marketing. I'm not a cover designer. So I'm not going to know exactly I wouldn't know how to put together a cover, right? So when we work with cover artists, and we've worked with a few, they give us a couple of different options, and that's what we need. It's like, okay, yes, this, but let's do this, this, and this, you know, let's change it this way. And it's just, it's a nice, fun collaboration that way. And so whenever I got my cover from my publisher, it's like, oh, we really love this cover, don't you? You know? So it's like, yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there's some, you know, each path has some pros and cons. For me, I would love to be what they call it, the hybrid author. I would love to continue doing some self-publishing and getting that creative outlet that way. But I'd also love to work with a publisher who can help get your name out and get it in front of places that perhaps I wouldn't be able to do so as a self-published author.
Well, that begs a question here, because I'm thinking to myself, I spoke with Dean Kuntz on the show, mm-hmm. and he's now completely with, I think, Thomas Mercer.
Yes.
Right. So you take a guy of that size and that prolificness, if that's mm-hmm. even a word, and you go to Amazon and they're a one-stop shop. So you're the publisher and the distributor simultaneously. Now, when you're that big, I understand you're going to get a pretty nice size of the pie. I get that. But for those who are new to publishing, self-publishing in particular, who are maybe even new to the show, and since you come to me for not only great interviews like with Tracy, but you get some of that inside business knowledge, let me tell you this, because having turned my first book into a film and selling it to Netflix and Amazon Prime, etc., and getting it out into the public, there's a little something a lot of people don't know about. When you go, hey, listen, I need you to ship 500 DVDs to the store. You may remember DVDs from back in the day. There's a little tally somewhere going on where we sent 500. Now there's a markup on those 500. You're paying for everything.
Yes.
When you say, oh, they never said no to me. Well, it's not in their best interest to say no, because they're tacking fees on top of everything. So, which is why when you see a movie made, it takes forever to make your money back, mm-hmm. because the distributor is, let's just say that there's a whole lot of bookkeeping that you don't get to see.
Wow. Wow.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's got to be tough, super tough.
And listen, and I talk to all kinds of folks here on the show. I talk to traditionally published, and they go, hey, we'll call the name Susie. Susie, I love it because they do everything. I write the books, and then they do it. Well, I have to do a little social media. Then you have the other people go, I'm a little bit of a control freak, so I like it because I have a team, but I'm really invested in that team. And then you have the other group that says, I'm self-published, I just want to have all the control myself. Then you have that fractional part that goes, well, I'd really like to be able to have everyone else do all the heavy lifting, but I could just write my books and maybe occasionally throw up something on Facebook or Instagram. And I'm like, never really quite works like that.
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of hard work in both paths. I mean, there's just no getting around. You're going to be doing marketing, whether you're traditionally published or self-published. And I think the big difference to me is that you, as a self-published author, you have to you have to be able to think of everything. You have to be able to know, you know, the right course that you want to take. And you have to keep track of all the details, all the little details, which I can't even find the ketchup in the cupboard. So the little details are really kind of frustrating for me. So that's what I loved about traditional publishing is that they help you, you know, they have your back, so to speak. And that's what's been nice about working with Adrian and Kelsey is that if I don't think about everything, they're going to think about the things that I forget and vice versa. So having kind of the partnership that we have, we complement each other really, really well.
I guess it begs the question, why did you leave traditional? Outside of the fact that I see you have a very successful enterprise here, but what made you go, yeah, I'm out?
It was historical romance went through one of its little deaths, and I had an agent. I was with Donald Moss.
You know,
he was my agent.
Hi.
We couldn't sell another historical romance at that time for whatever reason. If that hadn't happened, who knows? I might still be writing historical.
I asked a very prolific author. I'm going to keep his name out of it for whatever reason. And I said, hey, dude, you're so good in the thriller world, but your tastes and your interests are so vast. Do you ever have an interest in writing another type? And he says, like, what? I'm like, and I just the very first thing I pulled out of my head was romance. No, I would never write that. Well, okay, well, because you probably never read it. Yeah, never read one in my life. But then I talk to other people, go, dude, I would love to do that. I'd love to be John writing this, and I'd love to be Sally writing this. You know, I get a pen name, nobody knows the difference, but I get to exercise those muscles. So is there a big differentiation in your mind as you're writing? Hey, as I'm writing Flashpoint and this thriller and this FBI agent and this Zeke Blackwell and bop, 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 bop. Oh. But there's so much romance too. And when I use the word romance, there's just some hot sex going on. Let's just call it what it is.
No need to filter on my behalf.
Baby, I have forgot my question. I guess it's this. When you sit down to write historical romance, we'll say, does your brain go, okay, historical romance over here, romantic thriller over here?
So I haven't written a historical romance since 2015, I think. So I've been primarily just contemporary romantic suspense, romantic thrillers since then. But my voice can be very formal at times. I don't know why. I don't speak that way. That's not Tracy. I'm as down to earth. And I mean, this is dressed up for me. Okay. So I'm normally in my khakis and you know, ready to go out, you know, spend some time outside. But so I don't know where that comes from. It might have just been years and years of reading historical romance, but there's just a formalness to historical romance, just in the way that they talk. And that was the hardest thing for me to break whenever I went from historical to contemporary. And I remember one time I was writing, way that it works with the partnership is that we own characters, right? So I own certain characters and the other two ladies do as well.
Sure.
And so if we're writing one of their characters and they read it, because they do a beta read, they read it and they're like, no, this isn't quite right. I think, you know, he or she would say this, and then, you know, they would rewrite it. Well, there was one point where I don't even remember exactly what I wrote, but I wrote something about one of Kelsey's characters. And she's like, Tracy, a dude in 2000, whatever it was, 17, 18 is not going to say indeed. I was like, okay. So there's like little things like that, that creep in, even with this, you know, last book that I wrote, creep in. So my editors have to watch me a little bit sometimes.
Tracy, inside scoop, it's 2022. I'm 60 plus, and I use the word indeed all the time.
All right. I'm glad. I don't feel so bad now.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Hey, David, that was a spectacular dinner, wasn't it? Indeed.
Indeed it was.
I like words. I'm going to use the words however the hell I want to. There you go.
Okay, cool.
Okay, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to meet the two main characters of Flashpoint. Stay with us. David Temple here for Warwick's Bookstore. You know, one of my favorite things in the world to do is go find a favorite bookstore, spend a couple of hours milling about, looking at books. And if they have great customer service, it's a big bonus. You get that at Warwick's Bookstores. They're our brand new sponsor, and we are thrilled to have them here. Located in the village of La Jolla, that's just right down the road here in San Diego area, Warwick's is the country's oldest continuously family-owned and operated bookstore. And let me tell you something, folks. In addition to those highly curated selection of books, Warwick's regularly hosts author events and signings. Yeah, I've met more great authors by just driving down about 25 minutes here from Encinitas to Warwick's and see them and meet them and hear their story. But beyond books, Warwick's is also really known for its extensive, beautiful, and unusual selection of gifts. Now, Nancy goes out of her way to get really one-of-a-kind gifts. Jewelry, stationery, fine pens, one of my favorites, leather, office, and art supplies. And how about this? Complimentary gift wrapping and free parking behind the store. So if you're in the area, check them out. If you're not in the area, but you'd like to still check them out, warwicks.com. You can do all the same right there on the website that you can do in person. Matter of fact, they process phone, web, and curbside orders daily. That's Warwick's Bookstores and warwicks.com. Let me ask you something. How many times have you built a website or thought about building a website or hired someone to build a website that you thought, this is going to be it? Oh, it's going to be spectacular. And it's okay for a while and it's kind of pretty, but it soon breaks or gets hacked or falls apart. Or how about this? The kid that you hired to build it holds your material hostage, asking for more money. Yeah, all of those things have happened to me in the past. And I was a website builder at one time. AuthorBytes.com is a hosting company that does things right. Rock solid 99.999% uptime and 24-hour security that keeps your website protected. You've heard me talk about AuthorBytes.com for some time now. I wouldn't talk about them if I didn't believe in them. Are they perfect? Pretty darn close. Are they super cheap? Maybe not the cheapest, but I'll tell you something. For me and a lot of the other authors you've heard talk about here on the show, being dependable is so important. AuthorBytes.com has a special offer. If you use the code THETHRILLERZONE and sign up for a one-year contract, check this out. You'll get the first 3 months free. That's a company that stands behind their products. Sign up for a one-year contract, get the first 3 months free using the code THETHRILLERZONE. Trust me, you'll be very happy. That's AuthorBytes.com. Dave Temple here with a big congratulations to our recent winners of The Big Dark Sky by Dean Koontz. Want to say congratulations to Marion Apgar of Coarse Gold, California, and William Yee of Aliso Viejo, California. Looks like California listeners are loving The Thriller Zone. Anyway, once again, congratulations. You won your copies of The Big Dark Sky by Dean Koontz. Those are in the mail and should be to you this week. Also, coming up later this month, we have another chance for you to win some of the best thrillers from the best thriller writers in the world. Here's just a couple of the names you'll be hearing from. Meg Gardner, Nick Petrie, Simon Gervais, Haley Sutton, Sarah Pierce, Lucy Clark, Ryan Steck, J. Todd Scott, Christopher Swan, Riley Sager, and many, many more.
And that's just this summer.
As always, remember to subscribe, follow, like, and share The Thriller Zone.
Your favorite authors, The Thriller Zone.
And now back to the show.
Two of your main characters, again, we're talking Flashpoint. Olivia Westcott, FBI special agent, and Zeke Blackwell. Now, I don't think there, first side note, I don't think there's any more of a manly name than name is Zeke Blackwell. But they're two independent driven characters both got a mind of their own, both little sex kittens, I think, somewhere along the way. But how much do you share with her, and where do you fantasize? I mean, I'm sorry, where did you come up with Zeke?
Oh, gosh. Wow. That's a good question. It's funny because the Blackwell's family, the concept of this family of asset recovery agents, that blossomed about 4 years ago. We first started talking about it about 4 years ago. But we had other books kind of in the lineup that we had to write. And then the pandemic, right? So things changed. And then so it took a little while and it went through a lot of different iterations, but we knew that it was originally going to be seven brothers in this family. Some of them were going to be biological and some were going to be, adopted brothers. And then one of our partners, Kelsey, she had some family issues going on. So she wasn't going to be able to write in this particular series. So Adrian and I, we went and kind of rehashed and brainstormed and plotted and chatted a little bit more about it. So literally this whole concept has gone through, I don't even know, 4 or 5 different iterations. But Zeke was like always one of the main characters that we were going to use. And he we do it a little strategically. It's not very sexy. It's not very, woo-woo creative. We used Ocean's 11 as a little bit of a reference of inspiration. And so we started thinking about, okay, if we've got these asset recovery artists, everybody's going to have some specialty, right, to help the team to recover the asset, right?
Perfect.
So Zeke was our cyber guy, right? So I'm sorry, not Zeke. Zeke, I'm knee deep in the next book. So Rowan is the cyber guy who I'm writing right now. So Zeke was technically the number two guy in this Blackwell Asset Recovery Services organization to his big brother, Ash. And so he's more of like the weapons specialist. He's the breacher, that sort of thing. But he becomes, or right before the story started, he became like the CEO, the driving force of the company. And under his leadership, the company has grown into this multi-million dollar organization. So, but he's still a little resentful of his brother defecting the family business, basically. That's how he looks at it, to go and become an FBI agent. And he has some very deep-seated resentment about that. And that's why bringing in an FBI agent, I don't know if you're familiar with the author Linda Howard, but she said something on the order of, if your hero is going to be a firefighter, your heroine better be an arsonist. Great conflict, right?
Right.
So I do try to keep that in mind whenever I'm building my hero and heroine, my two protagonists. I try to put them as much in conflict as I can. So he's somebody who's used to working. He doesn't necessarily have to work inside the law, right? So he'll do whatever it takes to get the job done. Now, Olivia, she's an FBI agent. She's by the book. And so there's some conflict there.
I do have this question. Do you think, will these characters both in and of themselves show up in more Blackwell series? Okay. So both the agent and Zeke. Yeah.
Yep.
And more sex like that? Some hot, steamy sex?
Not between those two. You get new characters, new sex scenes.
Oh, okay. but more sex, please.
I'm so happy to hear you excited about it, because whenever I reached out to you, whenever I tweaked you that one time about romance, I'm like, oh, I don't know. He might read this book and be like, oh, God.
I have a confession to make here. First time on the show.
All right. Let me have it.
I like me some sex scenes.
Okay. All right. Great.
I'm not that big of a fan when it goes on and on and on, because... And this is why. I would say, Tracy, leave a little bit to my imagination. And you do that. You don't go down the rabbit hole of every, you know, it's not 50 Shades of Grey. It's just not overdone. And I love my wife more than my next breath. And she rings all the bells. But, you know, I'm a guy, and every once in a while when you're reading something completely different, honey, that has nothing to do with us, it does make you go,
oh, man.
Research.
Yeah, I'm doing research, honey.
All right. Here's another confession I have. Hang on one second, because I think it's hanging in my literary closet. One second.
Okay, what you can't see is David has run over, I have run over to my closet to get something out of it and pull it off the wall. Here I come back.
All right. I'm doing this because I feel close to you. I feel like we're friends.
All right.
I would not ordinarily do this. I have in my hand, oh my God, I'm going to get so much shit for this. When it was the pandemic, and I'm going to hold it at a distance so you can't really read it. But this is my idea of a romance series.
Okay.
So I came up with Family One, I got Family One, Family Two, Family Three, Family Four, and then two ideas for standalone romances, and even I've got three pen names. I mean,
oh, that's wonderful.
This
oh,
is
great.
This
oh,
is how.
Thank you for sharing that. That's wonderful.
So I don't. I haven't. I don't even know if I've. I may have shown Tammy.
Oh
this.
My gosh. Well, but, when you get the first one written, you send it to me, okay? You send it to me and we'll chat.
Okay. Well, I would come to you as a consultant because I have... All right, look, let me just get this out before anybody starts turning off my show. I love thrillers. I can't get enough thrillers. I like the pages to move as fast as they frickin' can because I only have so much time in a day and I want to get inside that world, experience it, and move on. However, I wrote a little Christmas story. When I saw your, I feel like I'm off the beaten path, but it's my show. I can do whatever I want. When I'm looking at your Steel Ridge and your Christmas capers,
yes,
I'm like, look, all right. You and I have so many idiosyncratic similarities. It's crazy. So I wrote this little Christmas book called A Wonderful Christmas Wish.
Oh.
And I wrote it. My mother was very sick, and she didn't like my thriller stuff because the language is rough. Right. Bunch of military guys. She did not like my Devourer because it was a cannibalistic prison warden.
I gotta confess, I'm not good with people eating people either.
It's not bad until you try it.
It's one of the few things that can eat me out.
Just try it once. But anyway. So I said, okay, I'm gonna write something for her. All right. And so it's a really tiny little ditty. And I shared it with a few. I didn't even publish it. I just printed it and gave it as Christmas gifts. I had more people come to me and go, dude, why don't you write more of that? I'm like, why? Oh, because it's sweet and it's charming and it's heartfelt. And so that was several years ago. So when the pandemic really hit, I'm like, well, if they said that I could do that, I wonder, maybe I could do this. So I'm going to share this.
Follow your heart sometimes, you know, even if you get into it and you decide, this, you know, that one time was enough for me or whatever,
yeah.
But at least then you would know, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, those Christmas capers, those were a lot of fun. Those were actually their epilogues is what their short story epilogues.
Oh.
So there's 12 of them and there's 12 books. So we've got the Steels, which is the first series, the main series, and then the Kingstons, which is kind of a spin-off series of 5 books. So those are epilogues for all of those books. And it was just a fun way to, our readers like to know what's going on in their lives. And so we threw in some weddings and some babies and some engagements.
Now, for my guys who are thriller fans who are listening to this right now and going, what happened with Temple?
Where did he go off the rails?
I didn't go off the rails.
Bad influence.
I didn't go off the rails, folks. Guys, stick with me. I love the process of writing. I love talking to people like you who love this and who this is their life work. I'm an artist. You're an artist. We're artists, and artists often aren't given the time and the attention and the accolades and the lift that they need. And that's part of the reason I whole started this podcast is because, well, first of all, I love podcasting and because it capitalizes on my former career, but I'm like, you know, we just got to lift everybody up.
You know, you hear about even some thriller writers who have been writing in the same series for 12, 14, 17, 20 some odd books. And, you know, and you can tell that they're getting fatigued by staying in that world. And, you know, I think I heard Tess Gerritsen say one time that, you know, she needs to be able to do different things. She's not just writing in the Rizzoli and Isles world. She's doing, I mean, she did science fiction, you know what I mean? She's doing all sorts of interesting things. And I think that, you know, I don't know where it started that we can't. Where did it start that we, you know, other than publishers, you know, finding a good thing and they want more of it because it's good for everybody. It's more money for them. It's more money for the authors. I mean, that's all good and everything, but we're creative people by nature. So we need to be able to experiment and kind of refresh the palate almost.
Yeah. And wherever it started, I don't care. It just needs turn the big page and move on, because you've made the best point ever. It's one of my pet peeves. If I'm a painter, I paint also. So if I paint in acrylic in large format, I like, you know, 6 by 6 feet, large format. And all of a sudden I go, hey, I want to experiment in watercolors, like 1 by 2. Are you going to tell me,
well, Dave, you know, you can't, you know, as an artist, you gotta paint the acrylic. You gotta stick with what you know.
Well, yeah, but this is what I know too. It's the same thing with the writing. The imagination is the imagination. It shouldn't be stifled by the public requirements or a publisher who goes, well, this doesn't sell. I mean, yeah, you do have to be sensitive to that, but an artist is an artist.
Mm-hmm. All right. No, I think even as painful as it was, whenever I went through the death of the historical romance, you know, back in the mid teens, that happening was probably the best thing that happened to me, because it forced me to expand my repertoire, right? Yeah. So, you know, I'm even moving more towards, I think I'm moving more towards thriller, because I feel like if you read any of my reviews, I do okay with the romance, but what people really key in on are my villains, my bad people.
Yeah.
So, and the tension and all of those sorts of things. And so those are the things that I've been really trying to key in on during the pandemic, because when we moved here, I became a full-time writer. So I've got a lot more time on my hands to dive deeper into the craft.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm trying to, that's the reason I listen to podcasts like The Thriller Zone and some of the other podcasts and things and just audiobooks, is I'm trying to understand that part of the writing that I do, the suspense, the thriller part of it, so that maybe I can enhance that. You know, I think I've got the romance part down, and I'll probably always have a little bit of a romance or a little bit of a relationship going on in my books. Because I enjoy that. I enjoy it when I'm watching movies. I enjoy it when I'm reading other books, whether they're romances or not. But I think now what I want to try and do is move towards what would, I guess, be more considered a mainstream thriller. I'd like to really try my hand at that and see if I can do that, see if I have the chops to do that.
Well, my first piece of advice is do it, because you can just flat out write, period. Yeah. Whether it's, for some reason, the movie Out of Sight popped into my head, which is kind of a crime-ish thriller story. However, there's a big whopping romance tied into the center of that buffet, right?
There's romance in just about everything people don't like.
Because romance is in life. So you can be a stone cold killer and still have romantic feelings. I mean, it's peppered throughout. By the way, I made a couple of notes as I was going, and I just want to circle back around because of our association with Carolinas. Have you discovered and or been to yet a thing called Wild Acres not far from you?
No.
Okay. When we get off the line, I'm going to dial you into Wild Acres because my sister and I, it's a writing retreat for creative writers, and it's up in the Pisgah Mountains.
Oh my gosh. No, I haven't heard anything about that.
Sits on the top of the Pisgah Mountains, not 30 minutes from you, not 20 minutes from you, probably. And it's once a year, right in the fall, and it's idyllic. So anyway, we'll talk about that.
Yes. Yeah.
Secondly, you got to go to that, period, end of discussion. I'm not taking no for an answer. Secondly, I couldn't find any audio, any audio books on your website. I probably wasn't looking in the right place.
Yeah, we have the first three books in the Steel series, Going Hard, Living Fast and Loving Deep. We have audiobooks of those. Okay. And we wanted to see how those were going to do before we did it. They're very expensive. So expensive to make.
Well, you should talk to someone who does audiobooks and see if maybe they could.
I heard your I forgot what you called that little segment that you did. But
if this scene could talk,
amazing job. Yes, you did an amazing job with that.
Thank you. I love audiobooks. And my first Detective Patinarelli series, The Poser, I did that. Did all the voices, all the characters, all the sound design.
All right. I'll go look that one up because we would love to do more audiobooks. We really would. We love to do, but they're so expensive.
All right. I'm not going to say that they're not expensive, but I am going to say there are ways around them being terribly expensive. Also, my study and research shows, because I spent an inordinate amount of time in research, that audiobooks are posed to be potentially what ebooks did when it lit the scene.
Yeah, they're big.
Yeah, because people want to digest and multitask. So we need to talk about that.
Primarily how I read now is audiobooks. I mean, I'm a huge audiobook, so I love them. I understand their popularity and benefit and versatility. And yeah, no, it's great.
As we get ready to wrap up, and I feel like I could talk to you all day long. And when Tammy and I come out in the fall to celebrate my sister's birthday again, because we missed her birthday, I'm going to roll up the road right to where you are. You're going to have to come over and see the new house, and we're going to hang out. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
Anytime. Matter of fact, we might do an extra follow-up. Oh, this is another idea. I want to get all three of you girls on for a cooperative podcast in the future.
Okay.
How cool could that be?
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
All right. Now, my question that I ask everyone, all my authors, right before we get into rapid fire questions is I like to ask them their best piece of writing advice to future writers and my audience.
Well, in my former life, I was a human resources professional.
Wow.
So this is a little bit of the writer in me and a little bit of the HR person in me, but I think what I would say is treat your writing as you would any other profession, right? So learn your craft, try to understand the business side, you know, and it really depends on where you're at. If you're a beginner writer, there's things that you just shouldn't worry about. You don't want to worry about the business side and all of that right now, but learning the craft is huge. I mean, and you can do that by, you know, reading craft books, or you can do that by, again, and I'm not saying this just because I'm on your podcast, but author interviews. I listen to author interviews all the time because I pick up little nuggets from them, things that they've done that they realize how it makes them more productive, or just like a craft tip on how to crank up the tension, you know, just little things like that. I wasn't able to go to Thriller Fest this year. I wanted to really, really bad. I even signed up for it, but then, well, I won't go into all the details, but I ended up having to cancel. But I went and I purchased all of the recordings of all of the Craft and Thriller Fest workshops. Yeah. And I've blown through those already. I mean, it's just constantly learning. It's just like continuing education in any other job or profession. Just, you might not use any of it. You might use one little teeny tiny nugget of what you heard. But I, that's my, I guess my tip is just to learn the craft, learn the business side when it's appropriate to do so, and make friends, you know, network as much as you can.
I'm going to say that this question, at first I was, I did it out of just inquisitiveness, and it has become my favorite question for that very reason, because it's like a miniature crash course. It's like a miniature crash masterclass on what the particular authors think is the their own little secret sauce, magic sauce, golden nugget, fill in the blank. Brad Thor was on last week. His was dynamite. You got to go back and listen to it if you didn't get a chance to. Just dynamite. Amina Akhtar recently, she had a good one. Dean Koontz has an entire masterclass in the upcoming, in an episode. And just Andrews Wilson. I mean, I can just rattle them off one after the other. Chris Hottie. And they all, that one question has become the single best thing. So thank you for that. And that's great insight. And I like that. And your HR background really pulled through for you.
Good.
Rapid fire questions. Good news. Hollywood has just come calling and wants to turn The Blackwells into a television series. Yeah, we're all like, wow. Now, as one of the producers, they've asked you to be a producer. I don't know if you knew this or not. Yeah, you got greenlit. So you get to help audition the leads. Now, in this case, FBI Special Agent Westcott and her love interest, Zeke Blackwell. Who would you choose to play them? And I know you, listen, I already know that you got it in mind because I went to one of your website pages. Where is it? Is it for readers? And you're like, oh, this is where the people, this is who we would put in that place.
No, I always do. It just gives me a visual. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's, you know, who I would necessarily want to be casted for the role, but it just gives me I'm a very visual person. And so I typically do have a male lead and a female lead that I look at. And the name is escaping me. Stephen Amell, I think if I've got his last name right, he was the Green Arrow, you know, the DC Green Arrow guy. So he is definitely Zeke. Superficially. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
and then Sarah Rafferty is Liv. And so she was in Suits and some other things like that. So those just visually, those two fit the bill.
Well, and half of it is visual and half of it is their expertise as an actor. We're not trying to drill down into their psyche, right? Well, here's a fancy part two to that question. Big surprise. What role would you play as a Hitchcockian cameo?
Well, I think, we have a really good special effects artist division? Okay. So
money is no object.
If they could turn me into a 90-year-old woman, I think I'd want to be Grams.
Okay.
she's like the rock of the family, you know, and she's just so wise, and she wears colorful socks and she gets to, you know, blast around the property on her utility vehicle and crashing it and things like that. So I that's what I want to be when I'm 90 years old. I want to be Grams.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. All right. Now, when you and your husband get away for vacation, do you spend your time reading, or because that's your full-time job, do you do other things with your time? And if so, what's your favorite pastime?
Well, if we're doing a staycation, it would be more, we do a lot of exploring of our adopted state here. So we do a lot of hiking, kayaking, you know, things like that. We'd like to go into some of these old mountain towns and just, you know, walk along Main Street and check out the local stores and things like that. I love handcrafted items and that. If we're just going to veg, then yes, I take a couple of books with me, and I'm not much of a beach bunny. I'm not that girl, but I would definitely, if it's just, I need to clear the mind, it would be a reading vacation, but we like to travel just to see new things that we're not, that we don't have here, you know, whether it's, you know, head out to Yellowstone and see some of the amazing, you know, natural features out there, or we've been to places like Florence and, you know, Edinburgh and just enmeshing ourselves in other cultures. And
sure,
I love trying local food.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
So, yeah.
Nice. All right. Fourth and final, you have gone out for a long hike there in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Unfortunately, you've gotten lost, not dangerously lost, but just lost, or should I say misplaced. Thank goodness you thought ahead, Tracy, and brought two items with you that could make your situation better until you get rescued. So you brought along two extra things. You thought ahead. What are those two things and why?
I'm going to say my Leatherman multi-tool and some rope.
Spoken like a true Girl Scout. Nicely done. My Leatherman tool and some rope. Nice. All right. Folks, if you want to learn more, visit TracyDevlin.com and follow her on both Twitter and Instagram as I do. You should see her Instagram page. Forget about it. At Tracy Devlin. Girl, this was fun.
Thank you, David. It was tons of fun. I appreciate it.
The pleasure was mine. And of course, the book, once again, ladies and gentlemen, is Flashpoint. Flashpoint has a bunch of double entendres up in there. And when you get around to 43 and 44, there's others, but those stick out in my mind. You're going to enjoy yourself. Good. Maybe a glass of wine and a cigarette afterwards, but you're.
There's chasing bad guys in there too.
There's plenty of chasing bad guys, and there's evil forces abounding everywhere. Age-turning thriller certainly makes steamy. Oh, that's so good. Thank you again.
Yeah, no problem. Say hello to Tammy. I watched your 1 year anniversary, and I felt so bad for her.
She is a trooper. She's got that big old brace on, and it is wearing her out. And she's only, what, 2-3 weeks in, and it's supposed to be six to eight weeks. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, but she's an athlete, man, and she's built for speed. So once, you know, she was already saying last night, hey, listen, let's think about entering a race as soon as I get better. There's a new hiking trail I want. Let's get you to where you can move from the living room to the bedroom without assistance.
Yeah, it's all in the mindset. She's thinking about the future to get through the present. That's great.
She's a rock star. And she's going to be reading chapter 43 and 44 later tonight, right. I think.
Okay, good. Hope it all works out for you.
Me too. All right. I have carved into your time, girl.
It was great talking to you.
This was so much fun.
It was, again, and I appreciate you being real good sport about the teasing you about romance and things like that. It's
100%.
It was really cool. It was super cool.
Nothing, nothing gonna faze me. It's all good.
Good.
All right.
I hope to meet you guys in person sometime, but until then, I'll see you online.
Yes, ma'am. We'll be there in the fall, and we'll be back in contact between then. But yeah, I'd love for you to swing by. We'll meet at the Marion Fillin' Stop with some coffee. And
sounds great.
All right,
David. Take care. Bye-bye.
How much fun was that? Felt like old home week. Felt like I'd known her forever. Tracy Devlin. The book is Flashpoint. It's hot. As you heard me beat over the head, she is a prolific writer. Speaking of prolific, and speaking of way, 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 way monstrously talented, but then again, all my guests are pretty monstrously talented. That's one of the reasons I love this show. What's not to love? You get to talk to really cool people, some of the best thriller writers in the world, writing some of the best books in the world, being turned into TV shows and movies. Oh, I love my job. All right. Next week, This guy right here, Brian Freeman. The book is The Bourne Sacrifice. And if you're a Robert Ludlum fan like me, who loves the Jason Bourne series, you are going to gobble up The Bourne Sacrifice. I promise you. Actually, I promise you. This book is in my top 10 summer reads for 2022, which I should probably do a little miniature show about. Huh. Maybe I'll do that and throw that in next week, because I have top 10s. I got them. And Bourne Sacrifice is right there. Brian Freeman, for whatever reason, I thought the guy was kind of cool and chill and laid back. He's got energy. He's got energy to boot. And the guy can write, flat out write. What they're saying about this book is all true. Anyway, do me a favor. Join me next Thursday for Brian Freeman right here on the Thriller Zone. In the meantime, I want to say thank you to my prime sponsors, Warwick's Bookstore, our new sponsor. Let me tell you, who doesn't love a good bookstore? You want to go to a bookstore and just spend a languorous couple of hours looking at books, talking to the folks who work there. Now, if you're in La Jolla, San Diego area, that's great. You can also go online, browse online, warwicks.com. Anyway, thank you to them. Thank you to AuthorBytes.com for always being there, building websites for a lot of our author friends. These guys know how to do it. They get it done right. So thank you both. Also, thank you for your 5-star reviews. I wouldn't mind a couple more this week. I mean, if you're loving this podcast and you've got the time and you're listening on Apple or Google or wherever you listen to your podcast, if you took just 2 minutes and wrote a review, that'd mean a lot to me. And if you want a real clear, easy destination point, you can also go to thethrillerzone.com. Write your review there. Please do that. We'd love to hear from you. As always, thank you for always being there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for helping this show grow fast like it is. I'm so thrilled to be here for you. I'm David Temple, your host. I'll see you next time for another edition of The Thriller Zone.